sponsors. Welcome back to Backbone Radio. I'm your host, Ross Kaminsky, and we have a distinct privilege and pleasure to be joined on the air by Dr. Glenn Reynolds, also known as Instapundit, one of the biggest names in the blogosphere. Instapundit, not that long ago, I don't remember exactly when, Glenn, you can tell me, got merged in with the Pajamas Media, PJ Media network of internet content, and PJ Media is going through some rebranding that I want to talk to you about a little bit, Glenn, before we jump into your own op-ed today in the New York Post that's fascinating in its own right. So yes, welcome to Backbone Media.
Earth-shattering change from pajamasmedia.com to pjmedia.com.
Wow. Unbelievable. Earth-shattering, huge. Well, tell me, when did you merge Instapundit into the Pajamas world?
Well, let's see. I've been part of Pajamas since it started, which was back in 2005. But I didn't move my blog actually onto their site until it was a couple of years ago. I forget exactly, about 2 years ago. They changed the name because when it started, it was not long after, as some people may remember, Dan Rather went forward with a story about George Bush's National Guard service that turned out to be based on forged documents, which were pretty quickly proven to be fake by a bunch of bloggers. And in the course of defending Dan Rather, John Klein, the president of CNN, said, well, this is just a bunch of people in their pajamas writing whatever they want in their basement. So we thought that was kind of a nice way to throw it back in his face. But now John Klein's long gone, and when you tell the story, it's gotten to where you start to have to explain to people who Dan Rather was. So, you know, it just seemed like time to go for a shorter URL, and that's what happened.
All right. And so you've been, I mean, you've got to be a pretty big name in the blogosphere pretty early on. The blogosphere isn't that old. And I mean, so how do you, I'm a blogger as well, and have a reputation as one of the more influential bloggers in Colorado, which is perhaps like being the tallest pygmy in the room.
You've got some big bloggers. You've got Joshua Sharp. You've got Stephen Green. I mean, Colorado's a pretty big blogging state.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting there. So, but I mean, what's your take on what would your advice be? I mean, I realize the blogosphere is very crowded right now, but to someone who thought, you know, I'd like to be a blogger. What's your advice to someone on how to be successful, how to make a difference, and not to be one of the many millions of pages out there that nobody ever looks at?
My first advice is start blogging. There's no better way to learn to do it than just to do it. My second advice is to find something, you have something special to say. It may be something where you just know more than other people. It may be where you've just got a different slant on it. But what I wouldn't do is just try to sort of repeat the same political take on the same events that everybody else does, because then you're already in competition with a lot of other people saying the same thing, and you're not likely to get noticed.
It seems to me, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that a lot of what you do on your website is, you know, finding interesting stories and linking to others, kind of like what Drudge does. But then you seem maybe to give your own opinion maybe even more in other places than you do on your own site.
Well, that's right. I'll write something of a little length on my blog, but usually what I do if I have an idea for something substantial is I'll write a column for a newspaper or a magazine or something, and then that way I can just link it on my blog, so all my blog readers still get to read it, but a bunch of other people also get to read it. And in addition, somebody pays me for it. So, you know, it works out all around.
Well, getting paid is good. I'm definitely a big fan of that. Now, you've got an article in the New York Post today, which, with the New York Post being what they are, they've entitled the article Screw You, with the second part being You, period. And it's about...
They're the best headline writers.
They really are.
You know, I sent them something bland and boring. I don't even remember what headline was on the piece when I sent it to them, but... it was nothing that good, that's for sure.
Well, the piece is not bland and boring. I mean, this is a big story, and actually it's interesting that you bring it up now, because it's a topic I had intended to talk about later in the show, and I still will. But Barack Obama's moves to try to modify the student loan system, and following his taking over the student loan system within Obamacare, and you note in your article that student loan debt has now hit $1 trillion, which is more than our total credit card debt. That's a stunning statistic.
It's colossal, and it's worse than it sounds, because the credit card debt is spread among a lot of Americans. The student loan debt is mostly owed by people who graduated in the last 10 years, and more student loan debt is in arrears than credit card debt right now. And just to add insult to injury, unlike credit card debt or, subprime mortgage debt or whatever, student loan debt is not really dischargeable in bankruptcy. So once you're on the hook for student loan debt, you're basically in debt slavery. It's the sort of thing that they used to do with the company store, or peons in third world countries or something, sharecroppers. That's really the position where graduates with student loan debt are today.
Except that the people who worked for the company back in the day might not have had a lot of other opportunities, or not been able to go to other companies that didn't have similar policies. But the people who are in this debt slavery enslaved themselves.
Well, they don't even have a job.
Yeah.
At least if you owed your soul to the company store, you did have a job. the student loan system is a disaster, and the only people who profited from it are universities. Because what's happened is, as the federal government has coughed up these subsidies, universities have just raised tuition to soak up as much as possible. And so it's wound up costing students more and more. We've seen tuition costs increase at several times the rate of inflation, and several times the rate of household income. And so they run away. It's been made up with cheap debt, very much like the housing bubble. And now people are finding that they owe a lot. They don't have jobs that will let them pay it. Some of them are out in those Occupy Wall Street type protests, which are economically kind of naive and stupid. But on the other hand, I have to say, I understand the frustration of people who went to college. Everybody told them they were going to get ahead. They ran up 100 grand in student loan debts. They get out, and now nobody wants to hire them.
Well, as you say in your article, companies can't hire enough mechanical engineers, but there's no bidding war for majors in fine arts or women's studies, degrees that cost just as much but deliver a lot less in terms of employment. I mean, you got to figure that a lot of those, Eskimo, transgender, comparative literature majors are occupying Wall Street and elsewhere right now.
Well, that's if you look at the little things they post, the photos they post on Facebook saying what they majored in, it tends to be in those sort of soft majors. And, but look at what people tell them. Somebody told you college is a good investment. If you go to college, you'll make more money. But the thing is, college is not an undifferentiated product. You don't just go to college and come out with a degree stamp, college. You major in something, and you get different results for different majors. It may be that on average, college is a winner, maybe. But if you are not careful about what you major in, if you think that any college degree is as good as any other, you could get yourself into big trouble. And colleges are quite happy to have you enroll in those classes, because somebody's got to fill those classes, and run up a lot of debt, because they get their money up front. But at the end of the day, you're going to be left with a big fat debt and a degree that may not help you get a job. And depending on what it is, it may even hurt.
And, you made the comparison between education and housing, and there's certainly a fair comparison there. The other thing that, I think of is the comparison between education and healthcare. I mean, to some degree, especially when you have Obama telling people that after some number of years they won't have to pay the loan back anymore, you have people feeling like they're getting something for free, or at least getting something with other people's money.
Well, that's right. And, whenever you've got a sector of the economy that runs off of other people's money, what you see is prices go way up, and quality stay the same, typically, and certainly not improve as quickly as it would under competition, because people don't care. And that's a serious problem. The higher education sector is a lot like healthcare in the sense that nobody's quite sure what it costs anyway, because there's a lot of accounting flim-flam and stuff that pretends to be financial aid, but is actually designed to figure out exactly how much they can extract from you. And then, you know, it's the rest is funded by what seems like cheap money from somewhere else.
We only got about 30 seconds left in this segment, Glenn, but what's your view as you sit there teaching at a university, although at the graduate level, right, teaching in law school?
Mm-hmm.
So, but in 15 seconds, I mean, are you seeing any change in the quality of the people coming through to your law school?
Not yet, but what we're seeing is more students are reluctant to take on debt. We are seeing students, you know, just either not wanting to come because they'll have too much debt or coming and being much more careful about their finances. And certainly, you know, I don't have anything really to do with the admission side, but of the students in my classes, I see much more focus on learning things that will help them get a job and succeed in a job once they get out.
Right back with Glenn Reynolds after these words on Backbone Radio. Backbone Radio, let's go right back to our VIP line and Glenn Reynolds of Instapundit.com on the air with us from Tennessee. Glenn, I wanted to spend a few minutes with you talking about Republican primary politics right now. I realize lots of people are talking about it, but I still find it interesting. I'm not bored of it yet. I hope you're not.
No, I'm just beginning to get interested in it.
So right now, the flavor of the day seems to be Herman Cain, as Republicans are kind of divided between those who like Romney and those who like anybody but Romney, and they seem to be kind of floundering around trying for Pawlenty or Mitch Daniels or Rick Perry or Michelle Bachmann and now Herman Cain. What's your take on that dynamic?
Well, you know, I have a prediction, and my prediction is that the final ticket will be Romney and Cain or Cain and Romney, and that their basic pitch will be we're both turnaround artists who specialize in taking companies that have been run into the ground by incompetent management and making them run again. And that's what America needs now, because that is, in fact, both Romney and Cain's background. They're both turnaround artists. The interesting thing to me is that I was in Washington this past week, and all the sort of inside the Beltway people seem to think Romney was a lock. But at the same time that that's the case, I notice more and more people are taking shots at Herman Cain. And in fact, Politico is just out as of a few minutes ago with a rather thinly sourced story claiming that 20 years ago when he was at the National Restaurant Association, Herman Cain may have engaged in inappropriate behavior in the presence of a couple of women. It's almost like Clarence Thomas all over again.
Wow. So, and I don't know.
Fact that they're shooting at him means, you know, that they're scared of him.
Right, and I'm sure you've seen the Washington Post's attacks on Marco Rubio, which show unbelievably scared they are of him.
If you're a minority and you're off the plantation, they really go after you.
Did you happen to see Meet the Press today?
No, I did not.
So David Plouffe, who is Barack Obama's, you know, chief strategist, was on. And he was on for a long time and just truly reprehensible and hyper-partisan. But one of the things he said, which was really quite incredible to hear a staffer say on TV, was that he said Mitt Romney has no core. I mean, those are his words. And talked about Mitt Romney, you know, changing views on this issue and that issue. What's your take in terms of, you know, I think a lot of Republicans kind of feel that way, too. They're not sure they trust the guy, even though they at the other side of the coin is they feel like he's probably fairly likely to beat Obama. So,
well, I got to say, you know, you got to figure a guy who works for Barack Obama knows an empty suit when he sees one. you know, a lot of people have problems with Romney. A lot of people are concerned. And, you know, and I can see why, actually, because, you know, he was a blue state governor. He did a lot of liberal things. The response, which actually it was spearheaded and named by another law professor blogger, a guy named Bill Jacobson, who's a law professor at Cornell, what he calls Operation Counterweight. And his advice to Tea Party people is basically forget about the presidential race and focus on congressional and Senate races, because if you have a squishy Republican president with a Tea Party Congress, you're going to be in better shape than if you've got a Tea Party Republican president with a squishy Congress.
That's exactly right. I've made that same point.
You might win on both sides, but I think he's actually onto something there.
But so, do you think? Let me ask you what you think first. The mood of the Republican electorate and also your personal mood? And I've asked this question a lot lately. If it came down to primary day, wherever you are, and let's say your vote was going to decide the Republican candidate, and your two choices were Mitt Romney, and you thought Mitt Romney was likely to beat Barack Obama by 5 points, or a principled conservative who you thought was running 50-50, dead even with Barack Obama, who would you support?
I'd vote for the principled guy, and the reason is, I mean, you're sort of taking it away in your hypothetical, but my prediction is that by November 2012, my cat will be able to beat Barack Obama, and I don't own a cat.
Okay. I'm actually inclined to agree with you there. The other thing that I wonder about, it seems to me like, and especially with Romney, that he's running away from good policy frequently, as if he thinks that good policy is still toxic politics. To me, I kind of think good policy is good politics these days. What do you think?
Oh, I think so, too. I think one of the sad things that you see from both the Democrats and the Republicans is that they are really underestimating the American people's willingness to face the truth. The country knows that we're broke. They know that Washington has screwed things up completely, and they know that it's going to take fairly drastic change to fix it. And I think the politicians don't give the voters credit for knowing that. Now, one of the things the politicians don't really want is to focus on this, because the drastic change we need, if it's done right, that is, in a way that will actually save the country, is going to make life a lot less pleasant for the political class in this country, which has had a nice fat ride of it for the last 20 or 30 years.
Yeah, similar to the universities getting a nice fat ride. All these the unintended consequences of all the wrong people getting an easier life.
It's been a good time to be an apparatchik for the last couple of decades, and those times are coming to an end because we're running out of other people's money.
So, of the people who are currently in the Republican field, which do you think basically have no chance at all of getting the nomination? And at this point.
Well, I think at this point it seems like it's going to be very difficult for Bachman to come back. I think that Gingrich looks great in the debates because he's a professor, and that's what professors are good at. But I don't see him as a viable candidate, although he might, if he keeps talking his way up, who knows, he might talk his way into the VP slot. He's got to be better than Joe Biden. And then if you look at the top rung, I mean, actually they're all pretty plausible. Look, Romney has got executive experience. He's got a lot of business experience. He's quite a formidable guy. If you look at his business background, it's really very strong. He's a little squishy, but he's a competent squish. Herman Cain's got a very strong business background as well. He's a strong guy. He can move a crowd. Rick Perry has got a lot of executive experience. He's been a very successful governor of Texas, and Texas has done tremendously well in terms of jobs and natural resources and budget management. And he's also addressing the higher education problem with a proposal to have a $10,000 college degree. Not $10,000 a year, $10,000. And he's got a plausible approach at doing it. So all of those guys look pretty good. And I hear a lot of people on the Republican side saying, and of course the Democratic side, saying, oh, the Republican field's so weak, the Republican field's so weak. Well, the Democratic field is Barack Obama, and it's really weak.
It is, and I think it's likely to lose. I mean, for him to have approval numbers where they are at this point for an incumbent, or, you know, most incumbents would be embarrassed by that. But, you know, he's not embarrassed by anything. I'll give you the last 20 seconds here, Glenn.
The biggest news here is going to be turnout. Obama got a lot of turnout last time out of just the excitement of electing our first black president. He's not going to have that this time around. We've already elected our first black president. For people on the right, it's going to be a matter of having enthusiasm to get rid of him, and I think there's going to be a lot of that.
I think you're right. I hope you're right. The country certainly would not do too well under 4 more years of Barack Obama. Glenn Reynolds, Instapundit.com, thank you so much for taking time out of your Sunday evening to be with us and also to tell us about Pajamas Media now being PJMedia.com, where you can also find Instapundit. Thanks for your time, Glenn.
Thank you.
So when we come back after these words, we're going to talk a lot more about not just the Republican field, but Muslims behaving badly and this Catholic University case that I mentioned a few seconds ago. You're not going to believe this if you haven't heard about it already. Stay with us.